OJB's podcast, 19 February 2014, All My Macs. Recently, we in the Apple world celebrated the 30th anniversary of the introduction of the Mac in January 1984. And yes, as a computer veteran, I was there. Well, not actually there, but I was working as a programmer for an Apple dealer at the time. I did get one of the earliest Macs ever made. And of course, before that, I programmed the Apple II and Apple III. Ah yes, those were the days when programmers were real programmers. I have listened to some podcasts of many people reminiscing about their early Mac experiences, so I thought, why not add my own, both of my earliest use of Macs and of further experiences since then. So, here goes. Just before the Mac was released, I was heavily into the Apple II and especially the Apple III. Yes, the dealer I worked for was one of the few who sold a lot of Apple IIIs, and despite their reputation, they were actually a really good machine in many ways. But the Mac was something different. It was a real revolution. Because the first Macs were all American models, they needed a step-down transformer to operate on our 230-volt power system instead of the US's 110-volt. This was before the universal power supplies we have now. The other Apple dealer in town also had a Mac, but, you guessed it, they forgot to use the transformer and fried theirs. So I had this little Mac with 128K of RAM and a single 400K floppy disk drive. Compared with what we can do now, the whole experience was pretty awful, but compared to what we had before that, it was fantastic. Managing floppy disk space was tricky because 400K, a million times less than a small hard drive or an SSD today, was needed for the whole operating system, application programs and data. But it could be done. But Mac Paint was such an advance on other painting programs I'd ever used before, even though it was only black and white, and Mac Write, with its abilities to display different font sizes and styles and to embed graphics, was so far ahead of other word processors that the inconveniences of the early Mac were barely noticed. Of course, the Apple II only had a 143K disk, and the same applied to the Apple III, unless you could afford the massive 5GB profile hard drive. After that first Mac, I progressed to newer models as they became available. The Mac 512 worked much better because of its extra RAM, but the Mac Plus was the first really useful model because of its SCSI port allowed easy connection of hard disks of 10, 20 or even 40 meg capacity. After that, I continued to move up the scale to a Mac SE, LC, LC3, and finally to one of my favourite Macs, considering the time it was released, the Centris 610. I had that machine at home, and it was powered by the mighty 68040 CPU running at an impressive speed of 20 MHz. I did a lot of programming, newsletter production, and game playing on that Mac, and I still have it. I'm not sure if it still runs, I must try that sometime. I had a much more powerful machine at work shortly after, when the PowerPC-based machines were released. It was a PowerMac 8180AV, and it had a PowerPC 601 processor running at 80 MHz. It also had some cool audio and video I.O. features, as indicated by the AV designation. That was probably the most expensive Mac I ever had, because at the time they cost about 13,000 New Zealand dollars. After that, I used various models at home and work. PowerMac 7200, 7300, and then the 8600 with the PowerPC 604E processor. Then the G3 CPU was released, and this chip was the first one to really realise the performance of the PowerPC RISC architecture. It was also used in the iMac when it was released a bit later. After that, there was further steady progress with various G4 machines with speeds from 350 MHz up to dual 1.25 GHz processors. I still use one G4-based machine as a server. By about 2003, I had switched from having one Mac desktop at home and one at work, with all the issues involved in keeping them up to date and synchronised, to having one laptop for everything. It was a PowerBook G4 17-inch with a 1 GHz processor and 60 GB hard drive. I must have got the first 17-inch laptop in town, and I remember everybody admiring the screen. It wasn't so light to carry around, though. When the 64-bit G5 came out, we all admired its power. I still use several G5 Power Macs as servers. But there was a problem. The G5 chip ran hot. IBM was losing interest in the architecture, and Apple wanted to move more to laptops, where efficient processors were necessary. So, although there were various laptops based on the 68000 and PowerPC 603 G3 and G4 chips, many of which I owned and used, there was never one that used the G5. Apple had to do something, and much to the dismay of many supporters, they switched to the same Intel architecture as the PC in 2006. So after a second faster G4 17-inch laptop, I switched to a MacBook Pro with a Core 2 Duo 2.33GHz Intel CPU and a 160GB hard disk. But I soon realised that a screen that size was just too big, so my current machine has a 15-inch screen. I hope to replace it soon, and that will probably be another 15-inch laptop with a higher resolution screen. You can see I've used a significant proportion of the total range of models over the years, and at home, me and my family currently have the following. A 15-inch MacBook Pro, a 13-inch Retina screen MacBook Pro, a 13-inch standard MacBook Pro, a 13-inch MacBook, an old 17-inch MacBook Pro, a Mac Mini Solo, a Mac Pro Quad-Core Xeon used as a media server, and three Mac G5s used as file and web servers, a Mac Mini G4 used to display photos, plus a pile of old machines such as a G3 iMac, G4 and 7200 used to run old stuff occasionally. Oh, and there are four iPhones, two iPads and several iPods, and an Apple TV. Now you know why Apple makes so much money.